We'll propagate the October 28, 2011 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, W4WLR, with this week's rain report. There is a real possibility that you may hear amateur radio stations operating around 500 kHz in the future. Actually, you can now, thanks to the ARRL 500 kHz experiment. One of the driving forces behind this experiment is Dr. Fred Robb, W1FR.
The origins of this project are in 2004, when I found out about an attempt some other guys had made to get an experimental license. I realized I could make some connections here and had the background to make something happen. I called up David Sumner at the ARRL and asked if he would support it. I talked to some people in the Coast Guard and found out what frequencies they wanted and what they didn't want, and ARRL gave us a green light, and I put together a group of operators. The ARRL attorney Chris Imlay applied for an experimental license, and it took us about a year to get it. So in September 2006, we got our license, and stations started getting on the air, started making contacts. There was initially some skepticism that an amateur-type stations could actually communicate effectively on this frequency, and I think we've shown that indeed we can. That was the origin of the project, and we went through a couple of modifications where we expanded our frequency band. We started with a little 5 kHz from 505 to 510 kHz. Then we later expanded that to 495 to 510. And then in 2009, we aligned ourselves with the current World Radio Conference proposals. We added a band from 461 to 478 kHz. And in that last modification, we also added another 20 or so operating sites and operators, a number of whom have gotten on the air.
These 20 sites, how were they determined and selected?
Well, you have to understand that this is an experimental license, not an amateur license. What happened is that I contacted people, people contacted me, people referred other people who might be interested. The people who contacted me, I qualified them, tried to make my best judgment about whether they were actually capable of getting on the air, had room to put up an antenna, and so forth. And if the answer was yes, then we put them on the list to be either on the initial license or on the modification that added the stations. And we tried to distribute this geographically as much as we could, but we nonetheless have ended up with a lot of sites in the Northeast and not so many sites in the Rocky Mountain area. But part of that has simply to do with population. The thing you have to understand about an experimental license is we are restricted to certain operating sites. We have a 50-kilometer radius around them, but you can't just operate anywhere, nor can I simply, I cannot myself add somebody to this license. It is to add a different site, we have to go through a formal process of applying to the FCC and getting an approval.
What criteria is the commission using to determine who can use this experimental license?
They don't seem to be terribly concerned about the actual location. When we applied, they were initially concerned about the number of operators we had because they thought this was getting to be more than a simple experiment, and I guess it actually has 43 possible sites. It's more than just a simple experiment. But the FCC probably would grant anybody an experimental license to operate down in these frequencies as long as they had realistic possibilities of building their equipment and operating it.
What kind of hardware and antennas and software are being used in this experiment?
That is a wide open area for discussion. There is just about everything imaginable that has been pressed into use on the band. Most of the guys are using commercial amateur-type receivers, although in some cases some World War II surplus receivers have been adapted. A number of guys have standard receivers. Some guys have various forms of software-defined radio that they're experimenting with. Transmitter-wise, we see a wide variety of things, ranging from solid-state, high-efficiency switching mode power amps to Heathkit non-directional beacon transmitters that have been modified, surplus marine equipment, almost everything you can imagine. Typical receive antenna is what's called an active antenna, which is a short vertical whip with an active preamplifier. And transmitting antennas, there again, we have quite a variety. The most popular sort of an antenna is a T or an L, that is a vertical with some kind of top loading on it. I have a plain 43-foot vertical, which doesn't lend itself and the trees around it to do any top loading, and I manage to get a signal out. There are other guys who have loop antennas. So we pretty much cover the spectrum on all the different equipment. Software-wise and operating modes, you see plain, ordinary Keyer-type Morse code. You see low-speed CW used for weak signal work. We have WSPR Whisper using the K1JT software. We have CMSK software, which is a minimum shift keying. It's a mode that's particularly good for low frequencies because it does not require a linear amplifier, and it makes good use of the signal power. And that is made by a guy in New Zealand whose call sign I cannot remember right now. But there are also a wide variety of other programs that are used for decoding and for generating a digital signal.
What is the maximum power and maximum antenna that you can use for this experiment?
Well, our experiment has a limit of 20 watt effective radiated power. And effective radiated power is compared to a dipole. That is, the 20 watt ERP is what you would get broadside from a dipole in free space if you put 20 watt in it. And that's the limit on the signals that we can generate. There is no actual limit on the transmitter power and the antenna. So the limit that we have as an experimental licensee is on the effective radiated power. Now, most guys cannot generate 20 watts effective radiated power. My antenna produces one or two. But there are some guys who have larger antennas, 100-foot tall verticals with top loading, for example, who can actually hit the 20-watt ERP limit.
What kind of distances have been recorded from these experimental transmitters?
Well, typically, in the evening, after sunset and after the delayer clears, it's relatively easy to work a 500-mile QSO. It's not uncommon to work 1,000 miles. And guys have done a transcontinental, 2,000 and 3,000-mile contact and reception report. When you start getting into records, there have been signals received in Europe and vice versa, Europe to the United States. Our signals from one of our West Coast stations transmitting normal speed CW have been received in Kwajalein, which is about 6,000 or so miles, captured a very clear Argo display. Signals have also been received from Mississippi to Kwajalein via low speed CW, a little less clear. There is a possibility that we had a Louisiana to New Zealand or Australia reception. It's one of these things where the timing was right and the H part of the call sign was copied correctly, but we did not, get a long sequence of letters that you could really verify it by.
You're listening to an interview about the ARRL 500 kilohertz experiment with one of its driving forces, Dr. Fred Robb, W1FR, owner of Green Mountain Radio Research. Rains Hap Holly, KC9RP, will conclude his conversation with Fritz in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
The recent sightings of northern lights clear down to the deep south, did that create any unusual conditions?
We haven't ever confirmed that that sort of thing has affected us. When we're talking about nighttime skywave propagation at 500 kilohertz, we're talking about signals that are refracted in the E layer of the ionosphere, rather than as HF signals would go up to the F layer. So we're looking at refractions at altitudes of, 80 miles or something like that. So it's not quite the same phenomena as affect the high frequency signal. And we have used some other modes, such as daytime ground wave, which are not affected by the ionosphere at all.
Tell me about what's happening November 3rd.
Well, November 3rd is the anniversary of the Berlin Treaty. It was signed in 2006 and created 500 kilohertz as the international distress frequency. 500 kilohertz ceased to be a distress frequency about 4 years ago. But November 3rd is the anniversary of this event. So we have tried every November 3rd since we got our experimental license to get as many stations on the air on the evening of November 3rd as we could. And we somewhat simulate the way you would have used 500 kilohertz historically, in that our stations will observe the traditional silent periods of maritime operations at 15 to 18 after the hour and 45 to 48 after. And what they will do is they'll call CQ, maybe on 500 kilohertz itself, and then they will QSY to some nearby frequency to finish off the contact.
So if someone wants to listen to see if they hear anything in that band on the 3rd of November, they should listen then on 500 kilohertz for calling stations and then see if they can follow them off frequency.
They certainly should do that. Now, I'll have to give you a little warning here that not everybody can operate on every frequency. If you've ever tuned up a vertical antenna on 80 or 160 meters and notice how narrow that tuning is, it is four times as tight on 500 kilohertz. So not everybody can operate everywhere, and many guys have reconfigured their antennas so that they can operate in the lower band now instead of the upper band. So some guys who are going to be operating the upper band will probably operate around 500 kilohertz and then move up or down a little bit for the QSO. Other guys will be operating in the lower band. They would be calling on 474 kilohertz and then QSY down a little bit. And there will be other guys who, for one reason or another, will not be able to sit there and do QSOs. They may just leave their station running in a beacon mode. Basically, that's just sending out CW with an ID and maybe a special message. And those usually occur between 508 and 510 kilohertz. And in the lower band between 476 and 478. So you might catch some of them sending some kind of a special message for the evening.
Where can someone read more about your project?
Well, we have a website. It's www.500kc.com, and we try to put just about everything up there on the website. Our quarterly status reports, news, technical notes, pictures of different pieces of equipment, and so forth. And Ralph Hartwell, W5JGV, who is the webmaster, is pretty good about keeping that updated. So it's a good source of information for not only what we're doing, but what other people are doing around the country and around the world in this practice band.
That web address again, please?
www.500kilocharlie.com. There's one other aspect of this. We're coming up in February to World Radio Conference 12, and we're hoping to get an international allocation out of the WARC conference, thus create a new official amateur band somewhere in this frequency range. And ARRL people have been working hard for this, so have a lot of people in Europe and other places. Our FCC is actually supporting a proposal along with the rest of the Americas. Not all the proposals are the same. The frequencies supported by Europe and Africa and the United States are all a little different, but we are reasonably optimistic at this time that we might end up with an amateur allocation. And if I might make a plug here, the ARRL Spectrum Defense Fund is what underwrites our activities to try to get these new frequencies as well as maintain our old ones and PPPL away and so forth. So if anyone's thinking about an end-of-the-year gift, this would be an appropriate time. If I might add one other comment, our website has a place on it for people to submit a reception report, and we like to get our reception report via the website because then we can tabulate them and put them on a map and so forth and see where people are being received. And there is a place when you file a report to ask for a QSL, and most of the guys will send you a QSL card.
What if someone wants to contact you? What is your email, Fritz?
Well, they can contact me at foxtrot.romeo-alpha-alpha-bravo@itemechoechoecho.org. f.raab@ieee.org.
Dr. Fred Robb, W1FR, a driving force behind the ARRL 500 kHz experiment. Be sure to tune around 500 kilohertz after local sundown, November 3, to see how many of the 43 licensed stateside experimenter ham stations you hear transmitting CW or digital signals. The Rain Report is copyright 1990, 2011 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for everyone connected with Rain, I'm Will Rogers, W4WLR, from This Week in Amateur Radio, bidding you a very 73 from all of us at the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.